where do we derive our value from? Because especially for us men, take our work away, give us an illness that's going to put us in bed for 6 months, and that'll kill us faster than any grunt work that we have to do showing up with a shovel somewhere. Because so much of our identity is tied to the thing that we do.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Ruben Aguirre. I really put something on that. He is the owner of 8signal, a marketing firm that provides fractional CMO services to companies that run on EOS, which is the Entrepreneurial Operating System. His other job is helping coach one of his son's Little League baseball teams and helping his wife keep all 9 of their children on track. That's right. I said 9 with a capital N. I don't know. That was weird. Welcome to the show, Ruben.
Kenny, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's not every day that I get to talk to somebody who has nearly double the number of kids that I have. So it is a great honor to be in your presence.
Wait till you meet my wife. You'd be like, okay. The honor's gone, Ruben. Scoot over.
Yeah. Or I might go, man, like you really, like God really likes you. Would you pray for me? So, man, I'm excited to have this conversation. We've had a few phone calls in the past. There's always a lot of passion, a lot of energy. And also with my marketing agency background, a lot of nerding out, which is always fun. But tell me today, Ruben, what is on your mind?
What? I was reviewing that question last night and I was like, I've got a lot on my mind right now. Which of it all? And do we just dump it all on the table and turn it into some sort of crazy pie? But I would say the two things that are three things for me right now are, what does a midlife crisis look like? And am I in the middle of one?
All
true
right.
Story. AI, what are we doing with that? And the third one is people. How do we deal with people?
All right. The big three. Midlife crisis, AI, and all of humanity.
Yes.
All right. I think the latter two could be linked together, AI and humanity. Which one's going to win? And then maybe that consternation, and that's a $7 word, is leading to the midlife crisis. I don't know. I'm trying to run a thread through all of them if possible. Yeah. But I'm not a therapist. I just play one on TV. But because you can't do anything with a bachelor's in psychology, that became abundantly clear as I got my degree.
Yeah, but me too.
But maybe there is something woven in here. Let's get some context. Maybe the easiest one is AI. That's a topic that's coming up a lot. I talk a lot about it. I'm talking to my clients about it. I'm actively working on some AI projects. This will be the first I mention it publicly, I think. Cool. Working on the Coach Kenny AI that would serve clients and maybe eventually further out, but just to help facilitate development in between major sessions. And it also helps me develop some workshops and customize. So it's a great tool and a thought partner in that way. But I'm finding that there are so many different use cases there. So when it comes to AI, and especially being in the marketing space, which is really where I think it was like the beachhead of AI to like the first impact, what are you observing? How are you using it, if at all? Is that challenging your business and yourself on how you approach things?
Mm-hmm. I'll start with this. I'm not using it as much as I would like to be using it. And I feel like there's so much that can be done that AI has opened up a whole world for a lot of us. I recently met a guy who's running a whole agency with 3 people and several AI agents that talk to each other and send each other information until they have a finished product that normally would have taken a team of like maybe 10 or 20 people, which 8signal is a team of about 15. I go, okay, someone is probably going to beat me out here really soon by knowing how to build out these AI agents and give them specific tasks and instructions. And But at the, and this is where maybe the people component comes in too. It's like, okay, but then what's human? What's the value of human life? Are they just cogs in a machine for us to dispose of, even though we might have warm feelings towards them? Yeah, this is where the whole midlife crisis is kicking in.
Maybe it is. Maybe what am I worth of the human race?
And so balancing that of, I want to maximize its use because other people are doing it. Not everybody. I think that we're still like in the early adoption curve. I don't think it's being fully adopted. Once it's in cars and in our toasters and on our refrigerators, it's really going to change a lot of things. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who haven't prepared, aren't ready for it, and whose livelihood is going to be at risk because they haven't taken the time to really understand it and adopt it. But then there's the flip side of it too, where it's, okay, what are the implications? And I know that in your former life, you were a pastor. And so, you know, there's a spiritual component to it as well. And all the crazy conspiracy theories that are only crazy and conspiracy until you see them play out in action of this, some sort of like modern version of a Ouija board or something.
Yeah.
And what is it that we're channeling through? So all these questions are just running through my mind. And I'm like, and I understand why business owners in their 60s are like, I'm done with all this stuff. I don't want to learn it anymore. I'm 15 years away from that. And I'm already thinking, how much more is there for us to have to keep up with?
Lot there to unpack, and not in a bad way, in a very good way. I think these are the conversations that humanity needs to be having, because to assume this is just, it's a fad, it's new technology, it's no different than when we got assistants like Siri and Google Assistant and Alexa. Oh, okay, that's cool. That's a nice convenience. I maintain that this is a fundamental shift in the way in which we work and also live. It is on the same scale as the internet becoming just democratized to where everybody had it in their homes and then just on their phones. The printing press, like democratized information so that everybody could read it, not just the super elite. And we look back at those things. I've been thinking about this, and I know this is you're the guest, I'm not. But I have been thinking about it in these terms is, we look back at those events and now we can study them in history and we learn about them in school or in universities and we could do the History Channel, whatever else. And we go, oh, wow, just that happened on this day and in this time and for these years. And it just seems like, oh, yeah. And it's so crystallizing. But we're in the middle of it. Like those people were in the middle of it. Did they realize that a fundamental shift in civilization was happening at the moment? Was that widely known, or was it just a few that really saw it? And it wasn't until years later, hindsight's 2020. I will bring it back with some humor, is that there is it's a phenomenal quote. It's funny, but it really cuts you deep. Andy Bernard on The Office during one of his little interviews, he goes, I wish you knew you were in the good old days when you were still in the good old days. You don't know you're in the good old days when they're happening.
Yeah.
And that feels a bit like the moment we're in right now. Is, I'm not saying that right now is the good old days, but the equivalent of, we're living through a fundamental shift.
Mm-hmm.
For people like you and me and the millennial to Gen X sort of generation and even older, but we've gotten to live through multiple. Most people only get one, if any, of these sort of shifts in their lifetime. And now we have multiple. So I can see the cognitive load. Even for someone who's techie and nerdy like myself, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, my brain hurts. I don't want to keep up with it. Can I just go live in a log cabin or go sleep in a Denny's? As we were talking about, that's a callback to something that none of you listening heard. So that's just a little something for me and Ruben. But is that sort of along those same lines? Like, we're in the middle of it. It's happening. It's important. What parts need to be important for you? And then I might even challenge you, because I'm going to keep layering questions, and that's a bad interviewer technique. So shame on me. My AI will chastise me later. But I also think, as a fellow father of multiple children, and I know just how intentional you are about how you and your wife are raising your children and letting your faith guide that and just being principled and those sort of things, is, what does this mean our children are going to step into when they're no longer under our roots. And that's something I think about as well. Are those some of the thoughts that you're wrestling with? And maybe you don't have clarity, but at least like, where do you feel like you're coming out or getting any clear view of how you would like to move forward and honor humanity, lean into the tools that are now available to help provide for your family, but also teaching your family maybe how to cope, live, thrive in a world that's changing so very fast?
Yeah.
That's a lot. So answer whatever you want.
Yeah. So I'm just going to comment on the Andy Bernard quote. And I would say, you know, Andy, what if we all lived as if right now and today was the good old days? And what is it about the things that we were reflecting back that makes them good? What is it about today that we'll be reflecting back later that will make them good? And I think that's that. And this is something that I've learned to do because I'm always living like in the future, and it's like where I want to be and what do I want to achieve.
Yeah.
You don't even have to slow down if you're Jim from New York City and going 50 miles an hour in a 5 mile an hour speed zone. Just look around and notice the moment and find the things that you can be grateful for today. And that will make you feel like you didn't miss out. Because I think the whole looking back on the good old days is another version of FOMO. So what did we miss out? We missed out on something. But I just wanted to just quickly drop that in there. Let me think about that. And then in terms of, that was a really big question.
There's a lot there. How are you thinking about it in terms of your business? Because this is a point of connection for you and I is like, how do we honor people? And because of our faith, we see humanity through a certain lens. And so we want to stay connected to that. But at the same time, like this guy who he's doing the work of 20 people with just three or four. And you think, okay, that would make me a much more profitable business, which allows me to continue. And maybe I could pay fewer people more money. I would have more money because I got to send all these kids to college, or I just got to threaten them to get scholarships like my dad did to me. How are you wrestling through that tension when you see a clear example of something? It's not just a theoretical. You actually know, oh, somebody's doing this. This is a reality for today, not sometime 2 years from now.
First, I'm trying to convince all my kids to go to technical schools or I'm trying to get an electrician to come out to the house and just for a service call, 30 minutes, and charge $120. Like, man, that's $240 an hour. Let me call an attorney and have him give me advice for 15 minutes and that's going to be cheaper. But I think that one of the things that I know, okay, as a business owner, okay, yes, come to me. I think as a business owner, because we're wearing so many hats at any given moment and we can't deep dive in every little thing, I think that the revolution of AI is an opportunity for us to live vicariously through our team. So if you're not able to really explore and dig deeper into it, rather than use it as a way to think, oh, how can I make more money from this, be more profitable, or, you know, pay my team less, or however, whatever thoughts around that might hit somebody. What if we look at it as, what if I help prepare this person to be a better version of themselves at work by encouraging them to explore AI through their subject matter expertise? So if you have a graphic designer on your team, like, hey, I know that you're fantastic at branding, creating logos. Go play with all the tools that are out there right now and see if that inspires you and that shows you something that you've done differently. And so now you're allowing them to learn and grow. And because you've become a conduit for it, there's a greater kind of reciprocity from them as well. And it buys that team loyalty. So it's not a loyalty to you, it's a loyalty to your team, because you're the one initiating that, not because they're the ones that are initiating it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're looking at it as, how could I extend this person. It's actually, it's adopting, in my opinion, a similar philosophy to what that other agency owner is doing. Is he's got his three people, and then he built these agents to extend what those three people could do. Like a lot of those repetitive tasks, things like it sounds like he keeps them focused on more like higher order strategic complex thinking elements. And that actually, those agents free them up to really bring the human element that mm-hmm. is still necessary in marketing, in business, in sales, and in everything. So what I hear you saying is taking that same approach is looking at, oh, could I lay off half of my workforce and recoup the profits and do all this thing, is what could I do to help them grow into the next iteration of their specialty, right? Because mm-hmm. all the jobs are changing mm-hmm. in some way. But I will say this, because I get in arguments. I do arguing. That's why my parents thought I was going to be a lawyer. But I debate this with people because they say, oh, guys, just outsourcing your creativity. It's outsourcing your brain. You don't have to think. You don't have to be creative or do any of that stuff. And I try to tell them, I was like, no, I was like, it's garbage in, garbage out. If your ability to create prompts is god-awful, you're going to get god-awful, generic, bland, stupid results back. But what I have found is that people who really are practitioners mm-hmm. of a craft, like a graphic designer, mm-hmm. like a copywriter, that those people understand the fundamentals and the art of what it is that they're doing, that they can ask better questions. They can interact in a way mm-hmm. that is far beyond just the novice who's, oh, great, now I can be a world-class copywriter and I can barely get three sentences out. No, you're still not going to be on the same level, because that person has all of the foundational knowledge. It's like playing like freestyle jazz, mm-hmm. right? People think it's just like haphazard and all this other stuff. No, those people are at such a level. They so understand music and composition and like all the theories behind it, that they know the rules and where to bend them. Because if you don't know the rules, you're just going to break them or do mm-hmm. something stupid. But if you really intimately know them, you can bend them, you can shape them, you can do new things with them that advance your craft, your industry, your whatever. And that's what I hear you saying, which is, you can hear, I'm passionate about it because I'm excited about that. Because even though I'm not in the land of agencies, I still have clients and have worked with people in agency world. I love the creative space that is in. Yeah. And I have friends there, and I want to see them thrive the way you're describing it.
Yeah. And there's a thing back to several months ago, I was watching this video on a couple of guys building a full song, like using AI.
Wow.
And it was the first time I've seen it. So I'm like, oh my gosh, anybody could do this now. But then I'm looking at these guys, and they've got six keyboards in this room, and there's all this soundproofing everywhere, and they've got a wall with guitars, and then you hear them talking to each other, and they're talking about like music theory and different types of tonalities mm-hmm. and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know what? No, not everybody is going to be able to put out a song like they are right now, because there's a depth that they bring to the craft that the mm-hmm. AI allows them to move more quickly and have more iterations versus somebody yes. like me who has never written like music or songs. And I wouldn't know where to start.
You need the basic, whatever the music wizard equivalent mm-hmm. is. You can't go into the advanced settings. No. Yeah. So do you think in exploring that, maybe that's the place where, what is the value of human life? What is the value that we today and will continue to add to the world and to others, even as AI advances at just a mind-blowing pace? Mm-hmm. As of this recording, I think we're sitting on GPT 4.5. 5 is expected to come out in the next 3 months. Claude 4 was just released, and Gemini 2.5 Flash, I think, is the most recent. And those are just some of the big versions. Mm-hmm. But it's every few months, like we're getting major iterations mm-hmm. and updates on these things. So do you think maybe that's this is called how leaders think, not what leaders do. But do you think that a framework by which more people, maybe especially those who are less, they feel less technical. And so AI feels less, oh, I get to do 6 months of work in 6 days. They feel more intimidated by it. Is there a perspective there that we're articulating that could help shape this so that it doesn't seem like a terrifying future where everything is robots and we're gonna be in the land of iRobot and they're taking over and there is no value to humans? What do we even do anymore? I don't know if I'm fishing there and trying to come up with something where there is nothing.
But I think it does. I think one a question that it does pose is, where do we derive our value from? Because especially for us men, take our work away, give us an illness that's going to put us in bed for 6 months, and that'll kill us faster than any grunt work that we have to do showing up with a shovel somewhere. Because so much of our identity is tied to the thing that we do. And as Christians, we're ideally, all of us, but all the time believe this, but as Christians, we're supposed to derive our value from the one who created us. And our value comes from that, not from what we do, and barely comes from who we are. Yeah. And I might be stepping on some theological toes here with some people, but you know, I think that it's not about who we are. It's what we're meant for. And if I were to summarize it down, it's a lot of time to see this as like relationships. We're meant to be in a community and to be in a relationship with one another, because if you believe in an afterlife, what is there on the other side? That's relationships. Sorry,
yeah,
that was a
ball. There's not work to... No, I love that. You can even look at, and in case anybody's, oh, no, that was sexist or something else, go look at the death rates of men post-retirement. It's alarming. Like, we do not last long. And I'm not saying that this doesn't also affect women, but if you pay attention to conversations between men, between women, and this is not meant to pit one against the other, I'm not doing that. But something that I've observed even in myself, and I've heard some others comment on this, but what's the first question when you're meeting somebody for the first time? You're out somewhere and two guys meet each other and they're shaking hands and doing things like, what do you do?
Yeah.
They're not asking like, oh man, what do you do on the weekends? You like rock climbing or you want to play the ukulele? No, they're asking, what is your profession? What is your career? What are you dedicating your time and energy to? How do you put food on the table? Yeah. How do you establish worth in this world?
Yeah.
Which I get to proudly say, as I was talking to somebody the other day, I was like, I think I'm unemployable at this point. They're like, really? Like you just wouldn't work for somebody? I was like, no, if I did, it would not last long. I've been on my own too much. I'm an entrepreneur. I think I've gone feral. But I do. I proudly wear that label, that tag, that category of entrepreneur. But that striving, man, and I do think that striving, it manifests differently for men and for women. But man, that's been something that has eaten away at me for most of my life. And we get out. I had somebody tell me this, and it was one of those things that it was just rudely insightful. And it sounds stupid when you hear it because of how simple it is. But he just said, hey, Kenny, just remember, you're a human being, not a human doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh? They're like, so why don't you just be? And I was like, I don't understand that sentence.
Yeah.
As comical as that sounds, like I'm better at it now, but that's still a struggle for me. And I think it is for any driven individual, is how do you balance that drive with staying in touch with your own humanity, let alone valuing the humanity around you?
Yeah. And there's something I want to circle back to that you mentioned about just that. Because I did make the comment about, you know, as men, we're more prone to this, remove our work. But I guess if we're sexist, it's because nature is sexist.
That's one way to look at it.
And because I even see this when you think of, and we're all wired differently. And so there's going to be exceptions, but more often than not, we're less of the exception than what we think of ourselves to be.
We're special, just like everyone else.
For example, it's a common phrase to say women are nurturers and they want to be moms and they want to take care of things. There's women out there in the workforce who love working and they love what they do, and they find it difficult to find joy in just taking care of little ones. And it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It just is. However, and I'm going to use, because we were talking about the acquisition.com workshop that I was recently at, I'm going to use Layla as an example. There's always expressions of that nature in us in what we do. Yeah. When you look at her content on YouTube and when you get to talk to her in person, you're like, shit, she cares. She cares deeply for people. And even though she comes across like hard charging, she's very nurturing towards her team and towards the people around her. And so whether she ever wants to be a mom or not, or whether she thinks she'll find joy in that, that instinct of hers is manifesting in the contribution that she's making to her own team and to people like us who get to listen to her on YouTube. So we can't, when we deny that and we fight against it we're draining our energy in a very inefficient manner versus taking it like fighting the wind versus just leveraging it to get somewhere faster.
It's like you can bemoan the wind or you could adjust the sails, right? And I'm glad you commented on that because I really have been struck by how Layla carries herself and her content and what she shares. Because she is, you got to do this and did this and this. But it is really cool to hear how her and Alex talk about each other together and separately. But Alex will mention so many different times about how Layla has really, he has such admiration for her insight on people and how to bring out the best in them and how to take care of them and engender loyalty and but also hold a high standard of performance. And so he's not threatened by that. He embraces it, leans into it, leverages it, and consults with her. And she's running a lot of those things. So I've seen some of they did behind the scenes. I think it was the Hermoses that they were doing. And they showed one of their team pieces. Alex is up talking about, here's strategy, here's the things we're doing. And Layla said, and as part of this, I want to talk about who you are as people. And instead of just being like, oh yeah, they're just turning through people, whatever, to make they're going to get to $1 billion and step on everybody along the way. It really was like, no, we value you and we want to train you and we want to help you reach your goals. And so I think it's a real encouragement of those instincts can be expressed in a multitude of ways. And it doesn't mean that they're, like you said, it doesn't mean good or bad, just is, right? But I think in order to honor that in other people, you first have to honor that within yourself, which I think is something that they really do a great job of. And because I know especially over the last decade, going through some really tough moments, and I was the striver. I was trying to be plucky and energetic and smart and know it all and do things and achieve things no one else was doing and making it blah, 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 blah. Look at all my gold stars. And when I got knocked on my ass a few times, and I really had to sit in that and process. There were no quick or easy answers. There was no achievement to be made. I moved slower. The founding pastor of our church, and I've been there for 18 years, but he took me to lunch. He was just checking on me because he knew how tough things had been. And he said, hey, doing all the normal, how are you doing? What can I pray for? Blah, blah, blah. And then he said, for probably the first time since I've known you, you actually seem comfortable in your own skin. And I was like, you know what? I think probably for the first time in my 30 years or so of life, I think I am. Now, does that mean I don't yo-yo still? I'm 37 and almost a half. I should have a half birthday party in a couple days. But I'll see if my wife will go for that or if she'll just roll her eyes. But I'll let the audience guess which one. But anyways, I think it is that comfort in your skin, knowing who you are, what you're called to from a position of faith of whose you are, because that's where the identity comes from in our belief system in the Christian faith. I firmly believe that if you don't truly understand your own identity, if you don't get that right, everything else has a much lower chance of success.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you achieve what appears to be external success, it may be someone else's success, which gets back to what you said that I really loved, which is, how have I defined success for myself and not just taken on the burden of someone else's death?
Yeah. And if you're, that's really insightful. And if you're running on somebody, like if you're running on a broken operating system, it doesn't matter
mm-hmm.
how powerful the apps are that you run on it. They're never going to be, or if you're running on, you're meant to be a Linux, but you're running on Windows, you're never going to be happy.
I don't think anybody was meant to run on Windows, just so we're clear. I was going to say a mic drop, but this is on a boom arm. So that's a mic lowering
moment. Yeah, we'll just do the sound effect.
I just probably ticked off my editor because I lowered the mic away from my mouth. Sorry, Lincoln. But that, I think maybe that's the thread that ties those three things that you were mentioning at the beginning together of humanity, AI, midlife, mid-business, crisis, whatever it might be, is where's that identity rooted? And what is my definition of success that's part of what I feel called to do, whether you use that sort of language or not, but you can feel like some people might use destiny or fate or something like that. I don't use those, but whatever you feel like you've been put on earth to do, are you in touch with that? And is it uniquely yours?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're the perfect person to ask this question of someone who has been in business for a number of years. That's not easy. We're talking about the white starting to come in on my beard. So mm-hmm. I'm going to catch up with you soon. And having a long-lasting marriage and having 9 kids, which is no small feat. It's a small circus, more but one that's but circuses are full of joy. But how, when you have all those forces on you, what if somebody's listening and they're thinking, maybe I'm not carrying all that, but I want to know what success is for me, not just what I hear maybe the Hormozy say success is, or somebody else that I listen to or watch or consume their clips. And I'm not against those. I listen and watch all those things all the time because they're encouraging and inspirational and thought provoking. But what is a baby step someone could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to start to define success for themselves that's rooted in their identity?
I don't know if I'm not sure of this answer. So I'm going to think about it after the call. But what comes to mind is, the very first thing that comes to mind is, we're all taught to self-reflect and think about yourself and find the answers within you. I think that's the wrong approach. I think that that in order for you to define success, you can't define that by looking inward. I think that you have to look outside yourself. Now, if you believe in a spiritual life, in a spiritual world, it's easier to find that external component. But even if you don't, you still have to look outside yourself and go, what cause, what movement, what thing out there moves me deeply? Because... Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say you can't look in yourself is because we're so dang fickle and we're always changing our mind. And we're like, yesterday I liked this, now I like that. We can't fully trust ourselves to know what's in our best interest.
Yeah.
But if we look to our ecosystem, the people we surround ourselves with, the relationships that we're in, the place where we live, the things that we gravitate to, those things start giving us little hints here and there. And then, and from that, we build our definition of success. We choose it. It's not being dictated to us. We're sifting through. It's like how you would help a student or with my kids. What do you want to do with your life? Try different things. See what makes you feel more fulfilled on a consistent basis. What are the things that you would do even if it was difficult, even if they didn't pay anything? And so looking outside of yourself, I think, in order to define the success for yourself.
Yeah. Man, you've given me a lot to ponder on that one. I'll get back to you.
Awesome.
That was fantastic. Ruben, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I didn't expect anything less, and I look forward to having you on again. But in the meantime, if somebody wants to know more about you or 8signal or how to keep your sanity with a bunch of kids or something like that, if they want to connect with you, where would you send them?
I think the best place to connect is, I'm not very active on social. So the best place to connect is just go to the website, reach out, send me an email through that. We'll have one-on-one conversations about this kind of stuff or whatever you want to talk about. Yeah. And I,
or your fractional CMO services.
Yeah, I was about to say, I appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed this conversation. And as I've been reflecting back on the conversation so far, interesting how very little we talked about the thing that I do, or even the thing that you do. So it was refreshing. It's like, oh, people are going to show up to the end of this and go, "What? So what does he do?" And we're going to say,
yeah, I'm not a big believer. Right. It doesn't matter. I'm a big believer in not pitch slapping people.
Love it.
I try to stay away from that. Let this just be a warning also to all of you on LinkedIn. If you try it, you might get a slightly spicy reply from me.
Yeah.
Ruben, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And listeners, thank you so much for spending part of your day with me and Ruben. I hope that this was informative, insightful, entertaining, all the fun adjectives. If this meant something to you, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice, I would deeply appreciate it. But also leave a comment, however that works, again, on the platform that you're consuming this on. Let me know what sort of conversations you want to have. I make this for you. I have fun with these, but if it doesn't speak to you, if it doesn't move you, if it doesn't help you take your next step in leadership, then I'm not really doing what my definition of success for this podcast is. Help me help you.
Awesome.
But until next time, change the way you think. You'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.
Bye, everyone.